Hey, I'm Rodrigo Núñez, and this is El Podcast, Culture, News, and Payasadas. On today's show, we're going to talk about soccer, or football, whatever you want to call it. I grew up calling it soccer because I grew up on the border. I would even call it football soccer, but anyway. Today's show has two segments. In the first part, I'm joined by Caballos Juarez, who is the host of a podcast called Los Caballos del Norte, in which he talks about all things Bravos de Juarez, which is the soccer team representing Juarez in Liga MX, which is the top level of Mexican soccer. In that conversation, we talk a little bit about the basic history of the team, including aspects like the unique ownership group, which owns teams on the American side of the border as well, how Bravos compares to past teams in Juarez's history, and we go a little bit into the current season. It's a great conversation, and it's very insightful into learning just kind of what soccer means for the region and for the country as a whole, and how this little team is making a difference. And then on the second part, we're going to go back to the days of the 2018 World Cup. In that World Cup, Mexico faced Germany, the defending champion in the first game, and we won. That's not a spoiler because it's the best thing that ever happened to Mexican soccer. Anyway, when that happened, I wrote something to describe what it felt like at that time to see this, to witness this, and just kind of what it meant to me. So the second part of the show is a reading of that piece, which originally was written for theirrelevant.org. I hope you guys enjoy the show and learn a little bit about soccer and what it means, and kind of brings back memories for you too. Anyway, here's the first part. Enjoy the conversation that I have with Caballos Juarez. So Los Bravos de Juarez have been a revelation this season, and it seems for people that are outside observers to the league that their success kind of came out of nowhere. They're a relatively new team. They've only been around, this is barely their second season in the top flight. Can you just speak a little bit about the history of the team, kind of how they came to be and how they got to the top level of Mexican soccer?
So yeah, this team was founded in 2015, and if you're from the border region, it's the ownership is called Mountain Star Sports Group. There's a little difference between those groups and the group that owns the Juarez team, but essentially Mountain Star Sport Group is the team that brings over the El Paso Chihuahuas and then last year the El Paso Locomotives. And essentially what they are is it's just a collection of families who are very wealthy in this area, who through sports want to impact some sort of or create some sort of social change and economic welfare for the region, and kind of in a better sense make El Paso and Juarez more desirable to outside business, and just, you know, kind of make that image of this region a lot better. And they think that a way to do that is through sports, and I obviously agree with them in that sense. But the difference is that group that's called Mountain Star Sports Group gets together with wealthy families from Juarez, and they buy a franchise. They buy what's essentially a seat at the table for the Ascenso, and that happens in 2015. And they do really well. Their first season in the second division in Mexico, they win the first tournament. Again, because it's Mexico and it's a short season setup. You have your first season, your second season. And for the second division, the champion of the first season plays the champion of the second season, and that's the playoff. So we had the opportunity to go through that, and we lost the final, didn't go up. We had another 2 years where it was kind of a very sporadic results, got to a couple season finals, but never playoff finals. And then last year, or 2 years ago, Liga MX decides to come out with getting rid of promotion and relegation.
Yeah, that was a big change, right?
Yeah, huge change. Essentially, what they did 2 years ago is that your team that should be relegated can be relegated, or you can pay a certain amount of money and stay in the top flight. But then what they did to second division teams is that you had to meet certain requirements to be eligible to ascend. Okay. So we had, I think, two tournaments. We had two instances where the team that won the whole thing wasn't eligible to move up. So right. The team that was supposed to be relegated stayed up. But that was just kind of coming in a process. But essentially what allowed Juarez to move up is Lobos Buap, which is in Puebla, relegates, and they paid their money. They paid the quantity and they stayed up. But a whole year passes and they just have a horrible, horrible season. Horrible. They have a horrible first season, and then the second season they kind of pick up, but there's not really any type of economic backing for the team.
Yeah.
And they get into problems with the university, since it is a university team.
Right.
In Puebla.
Yeah, and BUAP isn't like a weird word, right? It's like Benemérita Universidad Autónoma de Puebla or something like that.
So essentially what happens is because they were doing so bad, Juarez is able to kind of sweep in there and give them, pay them a certain amount of money that helps them cover their losses.
Okay.
But what happens is it switches the franchise over to Juarez, and Lobos gets the franchise that Juarez had in the second division.
Okay.
But because of the acquisition, the second division side is put on hold for a year. So we still have to see this summer what the league decides to do in that sense.
Okay. Wow. So the path that Bravos took is really very complicated, very different. It kind of seems like something out of Club de Cuervos. I don't know if you've seen that show, but it was scheme of like buying and everything.
It's most definitely that way. That was the joke in terms of how we did it. And and you know, it's not a very liked way to move up, since you're buying your way up.
Right.
But it's something that the front office here committed itself to, and they committed to getting to the top flight, whatever means necessary. Obviously, you know, and they said it at the time of the acquisition, they wanted to do through athletic means, you know, through winning the championship and getting through there. But when an opportunity like this comes up, it's something you can't pass up, especially now since we see the benefits of it.
Right. And this isn't the first time that Juarez has a team in the top league of the Mexican Soccer League, right? Like, I remember a couple of years ago, maybe it's like 10 years or more, there was a team called Indios that really liked. I still have t-shirts with the Indios logo on them, which is just like a soccer ball with a red headband.
Exactly. Yeah, so I used to go to those games, and that's how I started. But we had a team in the 80s, Cobras, and they lasted for about 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And then we had the Indios teams. But I would say for most people to kind of get excited about this team is that there's a huge difference between Indios and Bravos. In Indios, we had an owner who was a good owner, but of course he was a second division type of owner, was trying to cut corners, cut costs. You had players who would come middle of the season complain about not getting their wages paid. And then along with that, you add in that it was when the violence was really bad.
Yeah.
So it just kind of became it was not a very well run team in that sense, where we only lasted, I think, 4 seasons in the top flight, and ended up posting. It wasn't until very recently that we had the worst losing streak.
Right.
In the top flight. So, but the difference I want to mark is that was that ownership here. The ownership we have right now is extremely committed to winning and to having this team become a staple in the top flight. They don't want to be a team that lasts 5 years.
Yeah.
They want to be a team that stays. And what helps us out right now, even though it wouldn't have been beneficial if we were still in the second division, but relegation's being put on hold for, I think, a year, maybe two.
Okay.
That helps us out in terms of being able to solidify a good team. And I think you're seeing it this year in terms of that we're not really worried about getting points to stay out of relegation zone, but we're just really, you know, we're playing to win. And I think that's been a big difference. But, you know, I would add on that the influx of money we've seen with Locomotive and with El Paso Chihuahuas in the stadium, that's the same type of influx of money we'll see with Juarez in terms of getting a new stadium, staying in the top flight, bringing in quality players. Yeah. So I think it's definitely something for people of this region to get excited about, because it's a project for the long haul.
Right. And I guess that takes us to modern, like to current day. So right now, Juarez is, I think, in fourth place, or are they higher as of the recording of this episode? What place are they in the table?
We're in fourth place. 2 points away from being the leader in the league.
Yeah, which is really, really good, really surprising, and
it's It's unheard of.
It really is. Almost, I don't want to say miraculous, but it actually feels that way sometimes because, like I said, I'm used to like the Indios. I'm used to, you know, a flash in the pan, but it seems like Juarez is winning and winning well. They seem like they're defining their style. The coach is respected, right? Gabriel Caballero. So can you talk a little bit about the current season and just how Bravos is playing and how they're achieving these results?
So from the last season to this season, our main issue was that because we came, you know, we made the acquisition, but we made the acquisition of the franchise about a month before the season started. So we were kind of really behind in terms of getting players. And it's something we suffered last year because we played probably, I would say most of the tournament, we played with second division style of players. And it's something I can tell you, and I think a lot of fans can tell you, that there's a big difference between first division players that are regulars and second division players who are regulars. And that's something that really plagued us last year. But as the year went on, or the first season went on, we got better, a more distinct playing style. I think the only thing that hurt us last year is that we couldn't close matches, and that was due to inexperience, having players that are used to the second division, having players that have first division experience but just don't have that quality anymore. So this second season, we really focused in on just reinforcing every aspect of the team to have top flight quality. And I think that's been the biggest difference. We've had major signings that have been national news in terms of in Mexico and internationally. We've had our assistant coach, used to be an assistant at Barcelona in the Argentinian national team. I think his imprint on the team is very marked in terms of the style of play. And I think I really have to give props to the front office. They've done a really good job in signing players. They've gone to leagues in Uruguay and Paraguay and stuff like that, and found really good quality players and being able to make them fit and adapt to the Mexican game. Cool. And I think also another part to highlight is that they've stuck with how you said with Gabriel Caballero and not firing him after the first season, because, I mean, they had every reason to, but they decided to stick with this project. And that's what happens. You know, it's something you don't see a lot in the top flight, but when you stick with someone's project and give it continuity, at the end of the day, that's what's going to win you games. You know, Boston Celtics great Red Auerbach used to say that the main advantage they had against other teams was continuity. Right. So I think that's something that's not very valued these days,
especially in Mexican soccer, right?
Yeah, especially where there's so much movement. So, and you know, you're going to see a lot of movement, but in terms of the head of the club and the trademark players, if you have continuity there, you'll be in a really good spot.
Yeah. And I guess that leads to my next question. Do Bravos have any star players, or like, I remember Indios had Maleno Frias, right? That was the only guy that was near a star.
Yeah, the local legend.
Yeah, the local hero. Legend. He played for El Paso Patriots, all that. And like you said, Bravos has been doing a lot of recruiting. So do they have any figures? Do they have anyone that you think could achieve that term of continued stardom in Liga MX?
Yeah, most definitely. So I think just to highlight real quick, they have Dario Lescano, who we brought in from, he was playing in the top flight in Germany with a team called Ingolstadt. And then they went down to the second division in Germany, but he kept on playing there. And we just plucked him out the blue. He came over on a 3-year contract, and he's definitely a player he's the third leading goal scorer this tournament. Last year, he was our leading goal scorer, and he's definitely a guy who, if we're not careful, he may be moving to a bigger team after this year.
Oh, wow.
Hopefully not, but he's that type of player. And then the other player is, and I think the one who kind of struck more chords nationally, is Diego Rolan. He came from Spain playing with Deportivo La Coruña. And what he did was, he was highly rumored with a move to Mexico. Only thing was, is he was rumored to a move to one of the big clubs in Mexico, America. Okay. Yeah. Tigres, right?
Yeah.
And he shows up to Mexico City Airport, and all of the national media is waiting for him because they think he's signing with a big club. And they all attack him, and they're all like, who are you signing for? Who are you signing for? And his agent takes over, and he basically, you know, they start asking him, he's like, is he here to sign for America? And he's like, no, he's signing for Tigres. You know, we can't say anything. And then 2 days later, boom, he's announced with us, and it kind of was a thing where it kind of the whole country took notice of, all right, these guys aren't here to play. Yeah. And something that's been with Roland is that it was rumored that Tigres had bought him and loaned him to us because we kind of have that relationship with Tigres where I think three or four of our starting players are from Tigres loaned over since we have a really good relationship with them. They really like the prospect of Juarez having a top flight team and having it be a continued success.
Mm.
But he was an addition where we went straight to Spain, offered to buy him. We eventually ended on a loan with an option to buy.
Wow.
In which we're going to exercise that option, and he's going to be in Juarez for the time being for hopefully the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's pretty cool. And I also kind of want to touch on what does the success of Bravos mean for the community right now? You know, like you mentioned earlier, when Indios was around, it's when the violence was at its peak. And I remember that one tournament where they were really good. I think they got to like the finals or the semifinals. And that was such like the one shining spot in the day, right? Or for the area at that time. And right now things, you know, aren't really as bad as that, but they're not like rosy or shiny or happy, right?
Yeah.
You got violence springing up again. You got the whole issue with white supremacism and the president who's like spewing rhetoric against Mexicans and that kind of things tax on you, especially in the border where we're as Mexican as we are American sometimes, you know, or it's kind of that those lines are a lot more blurred because we're one community. So what do you think, or can you speak a little into what the success of Bravos means for the community?
Well, I think it speaks to what the ownership group had in mind when they set out on this venture in terms of the binational region. They're trying to clean up the image through sports. And in terms of what that means is community outreach, having the team involved in the community, having the players feel like they're one of us. And most of them really do feel like it is. And I think in terms of what it means for the community over there, it's a way to kind of, it's something else to talk about. It's something else to do. It gives people a sense of pride in terms of, look at us, we're fourth in the national standings. You know, we're on top of teams like Chivas, America, well, not America, but Monterrey, Tigres. Yeah. You know, it's something that gives pride. It gives people a pride with their team, something to identify with.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's something to get their minds off of whatever else is going on in the city, and something to kind of inspire. And I think the biggest impact that the team will have is their youth systems that they have, since they have U13 clubs, U15, U17, U18, you know, they have that. And that's a way to get, you know, have the kids that maybe result to another sort of business can, you know, turn to a sport. And that way you have a much better society based around the sport and they're prideful of the team. Yeah. And you have less people going into to those things that cause violence in the city.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's just, it's great to see something from the border, from where you are, done in an excellent way, right? Because like you said, this ownership group isn't messing around. The team is a serious team. We have a serious coach. We have like serious kits and uniform and all that. Everything about it is top notch. And that just reflects so well on you, on the community, because it's just like, well, say whatever you want to say.
We're doing it right.
Yeah, we're doing it right.
Which is
great.
Which is different to what we're used to in terms of the teams we've had in the past in this region. Hmm. This they still have ways to go to get to that MX standard in terms of first flight, since the stadium and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But in terms of we're on the right path and this looks like a sustainable project, most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's hope that you and I can celebrate a Liga MX trophy soon with the Bravos. And I just want to thank you for joining me and for talking about Bravos for a little bit and just kind of what they mean for the community.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I definitely think it's a subject that people, they may just follow the results, but I think it has, especially in this region, has a more overarching influence in terms of what we will get in terms of positive news in this region.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
No problem.
Once again, thanks to Caballos Juarez for joining me in that conversation. You can follow him on Twitter at Caballos Juarez or listen to his podcast, Los Caballos del Norte, to keep abreast of everything related to Bravos. and just follow along in this season, which could potentially be something really worthwhile. Up next, you'll hear the reading of a piece that originally ran on theirrelevant.org on June of 2018, entitled "The Hope of a Mexican Victory." In this piece, I wrote about what it felt like to witness Mexico beat Germany in their opening match of the World Cup, and just kind of capture what it meant for me. I hope that if you lived that moment, that it brings back some memories, and if you didn't, that you can kind of understand what that meant, not just for me, but for any Mexican soccer fan as a whole. Enjoy. The World Cup is the only good thing happening in the world right now. That's an exaggeration, but it's also kind of not. Every day in America, there's something crazy going on, from the assembling of space forces to the separation of kids that look a hell of a lot like I did when I was a kid from their families as they look for asylum in this country. The only good thing that's happening is that for the last 6 days, I've woken up early and watched soccer games. I have the benefit of being first-generation American. I am of Mexican descent. I grew up on the border in El Paso, Texas, and grew up watching and cheering for the Mexican national soccer team. The first World Cup in my memory is a 1994 World Cup, and the memory I have is the loss of Mexico and the refusal of then-coach Miguel Mejia Barón to sub in Hugo Sanchez despite the crowd chanting for him by name to be subbed in. To be completely honest, I'm not sure if that actually happened. I was 6 years old at the time, and I'd rather keep my memory this way than be proven wrong. Next came France 98, which produced some of the greatest goals I'd seen in my life, with both Cuauhtémoc Blanco and Luis El Matador Hernández scoring in heroic fashion. Korea-Japan 2002 was responsible for the biggest heartbreak in my life up until that point, when Mexico lost to the United States in the round of 16. Germany 06 was some of the best soccer I'd ever seen, and my heart was ripped out by Argentina in the round of 16. The Argentinians did the same thing again in 2010, and who can forget the hashtag No Era Penal debacle that befell the team at the hands of the Dutch again in the round of 16. The Mexican national team has been mostly heartbreaking in World Cups. On Sunday, however, when the Mexican national team faced the defending World Cup champion Germany, they were miraculous, magical, perfect. They were exactly what I needed. The magic started in the pre-game national anthem ceremony as the Mexican national anthem started playing. When it came time to sing, the crowd rang out so loud that it seemed like the game was being played in Mexico and not in Russia. Javier Chicharito Hernández was visibly moved by the booming sound of the crowd singing, and his eyes welled up with tears as he smiled. The camera panned to the rest of the players, and all of them were similarly affected. The crowd had shown up. Now the team had to do it. And Mexico played magically. The team was unafraid. They had a plan, and perhaps more importantly, they stuck to it. The first half, Germany maintained the majority of the possession, but Mexico was deadly on the counterattack and was frequently in position to score. As the game went on and Mexico kept passing up scoring opportunities, a familiar dread crept up on me. Mexico would have failed to score and Germany would eventually score and Mexico would lose. Right as that thought was about to firmly plant itself in my cynical brain, there was a miraculous counter. In the 34th minute of the first half, Chicharito receives a long pass from the defense. He immediately touches back to Andrés Guardado, a midfielder, and streaks up to the field as Guardado touches back to him. Irving Chucky Lozano sprints up the left side behind the German defender, and Chicharito spots him, passing the ball to him in stride. Lozano cuts inside and with the right foot places the ball perfectly in the back of the net. The world erupts. I jumped up to my feet and shouted as if I had scored the goal myself. It was a miracle. For the second half of the game, the Germans came back and attacked with fury. The Mexican national team held on for dear life, or rather, I held on for dear life as the team on the field was calm and collected, disciplined, blocking any attack and swarming any German that had the ball. Goalkeeper Memo Ochoa once again was elevated to hero status as he blocked anything that went near the net, including a beautifully placed free kick by Germany Real Madrid star Toni Kroos. The whistle blew, and Mexico won. It was a dream. There's no other way to put it. For months now, no one expected Mexico to win. I hoped Mexico would win, but knew it was a near impossibility. Yet, here I was, staring at the score on the screen, and Mexico had won. The post-game interview with 22-year-old Irving Lozano was my favorite moment of the entire game. The reporter asked Chucky if this result proved that Mexico can go toe-to-toe with any team in the world, and if they can, quote, disrespect any soccer powerhouse in the world, to which he answered, quote, there's no disrespect, but of course we can compete with any team. We have a lot of potential. We have great players, and we've just shown it, end quote. The reporter followed up asking, what kind of results can Mexico deliver with this team? And Lozano once again responded in a fantastic way. Quote, I've always said this is a great team. We all work incredibly hard, and all we can do is continue in the same way we have. End quote. I loved his response. I loved his mindset. But I loved it more in Spanish, because he said, nos partimos la madre todos. While it does mean we worked really hard, it's a lot more brash. It's a lot more of a slang term. It's a lot more real. It's a lot more Mexican. The fact is, the Mexican team is not the most talented. The federation is not the wealthiest. The team is not the best in the world. Pero nos partimos la madre todos. What Chucky said, though, transcends soccer. It's what being a Mexican is like in every aspect of life. Every Mexican you know is partiéndose la madre out there, working hard, raising good kids, being the first one of their family to go to college, being the token software developer in their majority white and Asian teams, or the diversity hire who has to prove he or she is a lot more than just that. Just working hard, it's what we do. I found solace in the fact that even at the highest levels of Mexican excellence, here having just felled the biggest soccer giant in the world, it's still the same quality we all share that has allowed this team to achieve that feat. It gave me hope. I know it may seem ridiculous to extract that much out of a game, but as Billy Beane once said in Moneyball, the movie, it's hard not to be romantic about baseball. I would say the same is true about soccer. The Mexican national team is the most popular team in the United States. It's the team of many Mexican Americans like me, and it represents us in ways like the ones mentioned above. In a time where our very existence, or our parents and culture, is being vilified as an infestation, the world was seeing Mexican excellence, and it couldn't be denied. No matter what the voices say, we're not going anywhere. We're going to keep partiéndonos la madre and making this country run. All of us. A couple of days before this game, Chicharito had an interview with a Mexican reporter who is kind of like the Skip Bayless of Mexico, who insisted that it's ridiculous for Mexico to think it can win the World Cup. Chicharito responded that despite knowing all of the team's shortcomings, let's imagine awesome things. Why can't we imagine awesome things? In this day and age, that's about as hopeful as we can be. When faced with fear about the future state of our people in this country, let's imagine awesome things, and let's continue to partirnos la madre, and we will overcome. Gracias, muchachos. Podcast is produced and edited by me, Rodrigo Núñez. Thanks again to Caballos Juárez for joining me and talking about Bravos. Thanks to Roberto Andrade Franco for giving me the idea to talk to Caballos Juárez. And thanks to you for listening. Please subscribe and share with your friends. Share on social media. That really helps the show and word get around. You can find more shows like this on the Irrelevant Podcast Network. You can find the shows of the network on theirrelevant.org/podcasts. Thanks for listening, and ahí nos vemos.
This is the Irrelevant Podcast Network. Thanks for listening.